But the first step in all that is really finding your farm. And so that's where you guys, I think, really shine.
Where you can see the different types of properties. You can search by different types of property. And it's just its own niche.
Welcome to the Land Hunter Podcast, where we discuss all things land. Introducing your host, Paul Morrison.
Hey, this is Paul Morrison with the Land Hunter Podcast, and we're here today with Mr. Tom Alexander from land.com. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Paul. Thank you for inviting me here. Glad to be here.
Appreciate you coming on. Tom, you want to kind of explain, give a little background on who you are and what you do there at land.com?
Sure. I've been with land.com, which started out as Lands of Texas, Lands of America, started 15 years ago. I've been in this space, so I've been a ranch broker for going on 42 years now, so a long time. So I have the experience of the land brokerage business, actually boots on the ground, I guess you'd say. And then I've been also in the marketing side of it since 1991. So started with Lands of America in 2010. We were acquired by LoopNet and then CoStar, which is where things really took off. And mostly what I do is run the magazine publishing division, but also everybody in the company works very well cross-platform. So we're all working to expand land.com. And, you know, we have our different divisions of expertise, but we work well together.
This podcast kind of evolves around purchasing land, investment in land, and how to make the most of that investment, whether that be through a real estate decisions of where, when to buy, whether that be improving your property. But the first step in all that is really finding your farm. And so that's where you guys, I think, really shine. I'm a client of yours. I am on the land.com platforms, and for good reason, because I think it's one of the, if not the best platform to search for properties. And I know probably, I won't say daily, but at least weekly, I have clients call, buyers call, and they may have missed a property that, you know, or they can't find exactly what they're looking for. And most of them are looking at the MLS on Zillow, Redfin, a lot of things that are kind of geared towards, I would say, homes. What I like to do is send them over to one of your three platforms, whether it be land.com, LandWatch, or Lands of America. So could you just walk me through your platform and why it works so well with land? What are kind of the key features that make it easier to find properties and narrow down your search on your, on y'all's platform?
Sure. I'll say really what we saw as the void in the industry or niche that wasn't being covered is, even though brokers most of the time were members of their local MLS, if you got into a state really like Texas, they, back in the day, it was, you might've been a member of the Houston MLS, but you wouldn't have access to have that property, that listing out in the hill country. And ranch brokers work over a vast territory. So you found that, we found that they would have to join a couple of different MLSs or border realtors. And still, even then, it wasn't a large enough industry, the land industry, for the border realtors to really pay attention to them, to give them the tools and the coverage that they needed. So that's really where I would say Lands of Texas started, is those brokers needed one place where they could put all of their listings. And we knew that if we built that, that that is where the people would go. It always seems like if you're interested in land, it's, you're a different type of buyer, even, you know, mentally, than a residential buyer. You know, you're somebody that probably understands a little bit about the ag industry. Maybe you have history owning a property, or your family has owned a property, but you want a place that has a place, a space like land.com, where you can see the different types of properties. You can search by different types of property, and it's just its own niche. It's its own industry, right, you would say. So that's what we try to do. The look, the feel of Lands of America, which now land.com, LandWatch, all of that is just geared to the mentality and the type of buyer and seller that is out there for these properties.
Yeah, MLS is just keep you at a very limited scope as far as the geographic territory that you can cover and not only search in, but also for agents also be exposed in. So yeah, I agree 100%. And that's one of the reasons I've been drawn to land.com is we were talking before this, and the majority of my buyers right now in Tennessee, in this Middle Tennessee area, you know, I'm trending on about 70% for the last 3 years that are not native Tennesseans. And I attribute a lot of that to your platform or platforms and the ability to market those properties nationally very easily. Because if I just kept them on MLS, I think a lot of those would get missed by some of these people out from West or Northeast or the Midwest that are gravitating towards Tennessee. So I think that's a really good point, and something I would encourage people to do is search on something nationwide. One thing I was going to go into as well is just the setup y'all have with the videos, the descriptions, pictures, all the search criteria from lakefront, streams. There's so many criteria you can search for that I feel is very conducive to finding the piece of land that you want or that has the attributes you want. And I feel like your platform sets up really well for somebody looking at land, whether it's tillable, investment land, timberland, you know, any kind of whatever your niche is for buying property. I feel like you'll have a great search engine and tool here to find exactly what you're looking for, or at least pretty close. You can narrow your properties down, I feel like, a lot quicker. Just your standard websites that are more geared towards homes, you know, as we talked about.
I know some people really love homes, you know, and they might get a thrill out of going in and looking at what the options are. But what we try to do is really create an experience. So if somebody is coming in from California and maybe they're looking at property in Tennessee, that's where they want to go. You know, it's a migration within the USA. We want them to go and see Tennessee, and we have an algorithm that's running. So it's going to put up the properties that are, I would say, the most popular, that are being seen the most. And then we have specialty ads that might be above that. But quickly after somebody goes in and starts seeing things that appeal to them, they can flip over to a map search, draw a line around an area and say, show me everything in these parameters that I'm looking for. Maybe it's 100 acres and they can spend anywhere from $350,000 up to $600,000. So they run that in there, draw the circle around it, and those properties pop up and they can just start flipping through with videos, pictures, interactive mapping that is there. So it gives them the ability to quickly educate themselves on what that territory, what that region is like, what those prices are there, just for, you know, land itself, or maybe with a lot of improvements. It's fun in the process, you know, because usually people looking at these are recreational.
Sure.
I would say that's kind of their genre is they want to get out there. They want to find something to hunt.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. That's where you were talking about people coming in from out of states. And we saw a big shift to that during COVID. Right. It's like everybody went home, and I think we were all kind of panicked and freaked out and went, wow, what's going to happen in the industry? Is it just going to shut down? And it kind of did for about 2 or 3 months.
Right.
But then everybody got home, and their first instinct is, which I believe is a core instinct in all of us, is security. And when everybody went home and they're there with their families, and after 2 months, they go, wow, you know, where would my family be the safest? Gosh, I wish I had 100 acres exactly up in the hills, off the grid or whatever. And that's where our traffic spiked. It went from, you know, 6 million visitors a month up to 12 million visitors a month, literally almost overnight.
Yeah,
and amazing. It's trended back a little bit, but we've stayed up in that, you know, depending upon the month that you're searching in. There's a lot of searching out there in January and February. And then certainly you get into August where it's 130 degrees out
right
there. Not quite as many people are looking, but boy, when that happened, we saw a lot of people searching and a lot of people willing to move.
Yeah.
Like, what is going to be the safest place for my family and for my money? And we were a good place to look for that.
Yeah. A lot of it was, like you said, security and safety, kind of your natural instinct. And then I think it lingered a little longer because people started to realize that working from home was a viable option. And I've seen a lot more people that have moved out, maybe say an hour out of the city or an hour commute, because maybe they're only having to work a couple of days a week in the office versus working at home the rest of the week. Or a lot of people have gone completely remote. And I think a lot of that shift, I know in Tennessee, it actually shifted a big movement to get fiber optic internet in rural areas in every county. And so we've had, just for 2 years going now, we've had a big push, and they're doing a really good job of running fiber optic down the power lines to accommodate all these people that need the high-speed internet, not only for their day-to-day activities, but also to be able to work and make a living, you know, remotely. Time will tell if that's the best option, you know, for the economy or whatever, but it definitely, I think, played a big part in that push to, like you said, get out and get away and just kind of shored up that need we all had to be safe.
You wanted to be off the grid too. You just, you know, get a Starlink and, you know, you can last a month out in the woods and have total connection.
I'd love to see the numbers on solar panel arrays that people put in since COVID, because I've either represented properties or looked at properties with buyers and completely set up on solar with no power and 16 panel arrays or 12 panel arrays, whatever it may be. But it's definitely been a lot more prevalent than before, at least that I've noticed. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that was a big thing. And like, even my wife, we basically live south of Nashville. We're in Brentwood. I'd still say we're suburban Nashville. And her company's a large company and a bank, and they're still on a schedule of 3 days in the office, 2 days working from home. And so I've tried to use that to get her to move out into the country a little more, but it hasn't worked yet. But yeah, that lessening the commute or frequency of commute into town, I think, has been a big part of that push as well. You mentioned it earlier, and I just kind of want to bring it back up. Homes on acreage is kind of an exploding part of the market that you mentioned. You know, y'all are mainly land, but in a lot of aspects, I've listed, and I know I've come across lots of listings on y'all's property where somebody might be on 40, 50, 100 acres with a nice home. And you can come across that on your website too. It's not just for land. Land's probably the main focus, but there's also homes on acreage. I didn't want to leave that part out, especially as we talked about people kind of moving away from the cities a little bit. It's definitely still a good tool. If you're looking for acreage and a home on it, I think it's still a very good place to go to find that.
I think we just try to qualify it as rural land.
There you go.
Yep. So it could be 4 acres or 2 acres, right, you know, just outside of the city, or maybe it's a town and not a city. And we're going to say, well, actually, this is a rural town, so we will have a home listing there.
Yep.
Because a lot of times people do that. They'll move into a smaller town, really love it, and then start looking around and go out and find a couple hundred acres that's outside of town. I wanted to go into a little bit the, you know, educating yourself on the market, which is, I believe, what we allow people to do. You know, it gives them the time and the platform that they can see the values in a particular area. And people have to get really comfortable with the area they want to go to, especially if they're outside of that. So having a good search engine where they really can look at what are the values of actually the improvements that are on the property as opposed to just the property, and then how safe is that investment? And over time, what we've seen in land, you know, we saw this big run up during COVID, but overall, it may not be a large appreciation or high appreciation, but it's fairly stable over time. So, you know, as far as a return on your investment, you know, land does not typically pencil out these days. As they say, you know, you're not going to run cattle, you're not going to grow crops or whatever that are going to pay for that. But the recreational value of it is what continues to drive this up. And as people are able to move out of the cities, as you said, and work from home, then now they've got a property that meets everything. You know, they can office there, they can live there, they can raise their kids there. There's huge homeschool communities out there that do this. And then they have a place to hunt or grow their crops or do whatever. They can design their lifestyle however they want to. And I think that that's something that we try to speak to out there, is give those people that experience and the information and the brokers with comparable sales data that they can provide to those buyers that are out there to really get those people comfortable quickly. Because if you have a large enough platform and you have the data for sales and you have the new listings that are out there, the current listings on the market, you can pretty quickly zero in on what is a fair value for this. And so get that buyer comfortable and show them everything that's around there. And so going from that buyer to that seller, because we were talking earlier about it, what helps you as a seller or a selling agent get that listing? Because typically people that are looking at a market, if you use our platform right, and you're really good also about sending out the postcard mailers, which help you saturate that local, what you would just call farming your area. But as we say, through land.com, through the Land Magazine, and now postcards that we're providing, we're going to give you the ability to really saturate that market. So for the most part, 95% of the buyers that would be out there are going to see your property very quickly. So if you're utilizing all those tools and you know, you're a selling agent, you're going to be able to go back. If that property hasn't sold within 6 months, because a lot of times these sellers have these properties and they look around on the internet and say, well, you know, my property is better than the one down the street. And that may be right, but it always comes down to price and location, right? So when that seller comes back to you after 6 months of you having it listed and says, golly, well, you know, why haven't you sold my property? In a very kind way, you need to be able to turn that around and say, it's not really why haven't I sold it, it's why hasn't it sold? Because we have you on the number one website, you know, you're doing card mailers, maybe you have it in the magazine. It's like anybody that is searching for property in that area is going to know about your listing. So the question is, really, why hasn't it sold? And let's talk about that. You know, you can't change the location, right? So it comes down to price. And that's a very difficult conversation. But I think when you have the platform, the data to be able to back you up and say, you know, we can keep this out there for a year and wait for the market to rise to that price. Or if you want to sell it and move on to something else, then you know, we've got to lower that price.
Yeah, I agree. Having that tough conversation up front and saying, this is what the market says your land's worth. Now, if you want to try and sell it at the price you're looking for or something in between, we can try for X amount of days. If you'll agree, if we haven't had any showings or any offers or put it under contract, or we haven't had it to the level we want it at, that we'll agree to maybe reduce that price. I guess the overall thing of this is what I really want people to understand, I think, is that the longer your property's on the market, there's an inverse relationship with value there most of the time. You know, mm-hmm. Whether that's fair or not, it's probably not, but you're going to get a little bit of a negative stigma on your property. If I look up there and I see, well, they want $1 million for that property, but it's been on the market for 363 days. Well, as an agent from the opposite side, a buyer's agent, I already know I'm coming in extremely low on that. So Even though the agent wanted to list it at 800,000, you wanted $1 million, at the end of the day, you're probably going to get an offer for about 800,000. You know what I mean? So it's all going to pan out to that market value. And that's why we refer to it as the market value, because it shouldn't be numbers your agent's just making up and appeasing you with. They should be showing you these comparative analysis and really just being honest with you and saying, the market says your property is worth X. And now through my marketing and through some other things, do I think we could maybe squeeze a little more out of it? That's between you and the client. But I agree, having that knowledge going in and just as the consumer and understanding, being able to look at prices in a certain area and follow the trends will probably put you in the right mindset as a seller to position that price a little better. And there's a lot of factors that go into that, whether you need to sell or, you know, you're crunched to sell or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Motivation is everything. As I say, there are some, you know, old sayings in real estate, like usually the first offer is the best offer. And a lot of times that is right. As we were speaking about timing on that is when that property hits the market, if it's priced correctly, there's people that have been out there searching in that market. And if they haven't bought anything, they've looked at a bunch of properties and for some reason they walked away from them. It didn't meet their needs, or if it did meet their needs, it was way overpriced. So if you come in with a good property and it meets their needs and it's fairly priced, they're going to make the highest offer on it because they know the market. They don't want to miss that opportunity. And, you know, same thing can happen in residential, but I think one of the biggest changes or differences between land or rural property and residential is, you know, it's easier to get a market analysis, comparable sales on residential. There's just so much more data that is out there. But normally people are motivated much more highly. Somebody decides, if a family decides to put their house on the market, they've made a decision that they want to move. Now they've started to get their eye on something else. So they may not have found that house that they want, but they're really close. And so they get their house, you know, ready to show, put it on the market. Now it's been on the market maybe for 2 or 3 months because the best offers that came in the beginning, the motivation is going to be when that family, maybe it's the mom, maybe it's the husband, the dad says, oh, we found the property that we want and we're ready to move. So now that agent gets the call and says, sell our house. Call those people back and tell them we'll take that offer, whatever it is, because that motivation there is we have something, they've got their eyes on another property. And that can happen in land, but usually it's moving a little bit slower than that. And so that sellers, they've decided they want to go, but a lot of times it's a decision of, boy, look at the market. I think that we could get X amount for the property, and boy, that's a good investment. We made a good return. Let's sell it, and then we'll go and start looking for something else. Yep. But they don't really have their eyes on another property.
Agreed. Yet. Yeah, the only caveat to that in land is somebody that might be doing a 1031 exchange, and they tend kind of the same kind of deal. They've put that rush on themselves, you know, a little bit, and so I felt they're a little more apt to pay a little more or take a little less to kind of get things moved so they can get to their next property. But I agree 100%. Yeah. There's definitely a different pace to selling a home versus selling land.
And it's interesting because they think it's a tax-free exchange, but no, it's a tax-deferred exchange. So it doesn't mean that, you know, I've had a lot of people over the time that have, you know, gone and sold their property and they decide to put it in a 1031 exchange. So before, you have to set up the intermediary and all that. But they get in it and they start looking and they feel the pressure of, boy, I'm going to be paying too much here. I'm just going to pay the taxes on this and sit back and relax and take my time and then go out there and find the property that I want, because you don't want to get stuck in a property that you bought just because you were, you know, forced in it by time. You put the pressure on yourself, because then you're not going to be happy with it. And I've seen that time and time again where people buy properties and it isn't exactly what they wanted. The entire family is not happy. And then they spend the next 3 years trying to get rid of
it.
Splitting it up, doing whatever.
Yeah, tax deferred is that's a good thing to bring up. You're going to pay those taxes. The government's going to get it the money at some point. So unfortunately, there's just no way around that one. It's funny you bring that up. I put a property, it went live yesterday, and we got an offer immediately from one of the neighbors. And it wasn't a full price offer, but it was a fairly competitive, I feel like, offer. And it was kind of like you mentioned, is the first offer the best offer? We countered back and forth once or twice, and they ended up walking away from the offer. And she asked me, you know, obviously I gave her my advice over the course of negotiating, but at the end there, she just kind of made her decision that, no, we're just not going to sell it for that. And I said, hey, that I understand. She goes, you think I'm making the right decision? And that can be a tough question to answer. I mean, it was close enough to asking price that I feel like it was within that range of probably fair market value, what I'd figured up in the comparative analysis. But that being an offer on day one, I think really excites people, of course, excited me. And we've had calls on it. But, you know, I hope we don't look back in a couple of months and say, man, we missed out on the best offer that was the initial offer. It turns out the people that made an offer were people down the street that have been waiting for this property to get to go on market for years and years. I mean, decades. They were just adding to their family.
That was farm. the neighbor that made the offer.
Yeah, the neighbor that made the offer. And it's funny, I didn't realize who it was, but when I was out there taking pictures and doing my workup on the property, I was parked on the side of the road there, and a guy stopped and said, "Hey, I see you're with Mossy Oak Properties." I had to sign on my truck and all that. And he said, "Well, hey, is this coming on the market?" And I said, "Well, I'm not sure yet. We don't have a listing agreement, but it's moving towards that." And he was like, you know, we started talking about hunting the area and all that after that. But turns out that same guy that stopped me was the guy that called me and wanted to make an offer, and ended up after just talking with him being the same guy. And
so did they have a common boundary?
They were one boundary apart.
Oh,
the brother of the property that I was selling owned the property between them, but he already had hunting permission on the brother's property. So it would have given him another nice addition to that acreage to hunt. And it's on the Buffalo River, so it's nice river frontage and stuff. But, you know, I always wonder, will we end up circling back to that particular person? I hope not. You know, I hope we get a full price offer and we're on day two. So we will see. But that's always in the back of your mind. Like you said, is that first offer the best offer? And is it always best to kind of throw it out just because it's the first?
If they're just adding to their land holdings, if they're not going to sell their existing place, they're adding this to it, which is one of the benefits. If you have a property that is now for sale and the actual neighbor with the common boundary comes in and, you know, he wants everything that his land touches. So his first reaction is, well, it's not worth that, you know, because maybe it's asking $5,000 an acre and he paid $2,000 an acre for his property. And he's just going, I'm not going to pay that. Well, at the end of the day, even if he buys that and it doubles his land holdings, if you dollar cost average it down, now he's bought, you know, he's got twice the amount of property and he's not in it at $5,000 an acre. But a lot of times those buyers don't see it that way. They just get caught up in it. And the next thing you know, that property sells. And they're kicking themselves, especially 2 years down the road when they say, now I've got a neighbor still. I didn't buy that property. The values are up and I missed that opportunity. So I have a really good friend of mine that always says he gets in that situation regardless of what he is purchasing. And he has a very practical way of looking at it. And it's basically, I look at what I want to pay for it, what it actually is, what that's going to add to my other holdings. But the bottom line is, am I going to let on this size deal $100,000, $200,000 stand between me and what I want?
Agreed.
Because long term, he goes, if I make that decision, I'm usually sorry for that. And he's usually right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of people get stuck, especially those next door neighbors, because I market to them a lot. I'll use a postcard on a property and I'll go out about 5 miles and just say, you know, just listed, and just kind of let them know that property's for sale, in case, mainly for any neighbors that may want to buy, or, you know, it's obviously a marketing tool for me to potentially pick up a few more listings in that area. But ideally it's to find a buyer or someone that touches that property. I think you hit on a really great point that I think everybody almost overlooks is, you're right. If you already own 100 acres and you're able to pick up the 100 acres next door, and even if it is, like you said, $5,000 an acre and you paid $3,000, you start averaging that out, your price per acre that you paid
$4,000 an acre is
below market value. Even if I'm in a battle with somebody and it's the piece I really want and I think is right for me, I'll pay 5% over asking price, because you know what? Next year, I've already made that 5% back up, right? Land is, I want to say the national average at one time was 10% year over year. I know some areas like where I'm at, it's more than that. Some areas it's going to be less. I've heard 5 to 7. But if I pay 5% more than it's worth this year, I'm already caught back up next year. So, I mean, and if land's more typical of a long-term holding, so it's not like you're just giving away equity if you happen to overpay by a little bit if that's what it takes to get that property that you want. Not that that's the ideal strategy, but it's just something to think about going along with, well, if I pay the next door neighbor, you know, it averages out. Well, if I buy that piece of property a year or two, I'm still ahead of the market.
Yeah, and you're in this long enough and you see those values go up like that and the opportunities that even you personally miss and you're just like, oh my gosh, how could I have done that? Yeah, I looked at one of the finest duck hunting properties in Mississippi, and this was 22 years ago, and I think they were asking $675 an acre. But at that time, that property was only worth, you know, $600 an acre. And we negotiated, we got down to like $625 an acre, and I was finally like, no, I'm out. That it's only worth $600 an acre. Well, I mean, here we are. I missed all the opportunity of duck hunting that property, of enjoying it. And now that stuff is worth about $3,750 an acre.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, you get customers that you worked with for a long time buying and selling property, and you watch that happen. You watch, maybe he's paying a little bit too much for this, but over time you watch them roll through and, you know, 1031 exchange from one property to another, and you watch them build this wealth in land, and you realize, my gosh, you know, it's a great opportunity. And like you said, you can't play on your Roth or your 401k, but you can play on this land.
Absolutely. You know? You can definitely enjoy it and hunt it, farm it, whatever you want to do on it. We talked about buying a little high. I mean, it's no different, really. You bring up Roth and 401k. Most of those are in some kind of fund, right? Whatever stocks they're in, they're still buying every month, even if those stocks are higher. So it's kind of the same principle, right? Is that you're not waiting for the stock to bottom out and buy it and sell everything at the top. Every year, every month, however your fund invests, it's invested in those same funds, whether they're, you know, they'll change some, but whether they're high or low, they're still pumping money into it. And it's kind of similar with, if you're overpaying a little bit for this property, it's not a whole lot different than overpaying for a stock that's going to come back down a little bit, in my mind. People obviously have budget.
Let me break in there, because you can put that money into stock and maybe it'll go up, maybe it'll go down, it won't. But there's no lifestyle, there's no memories, there's nothing tied to that.
Absolutely.
And I love to tell the story, but the first deer that I ever harvested was sitting on my grandfather's lap with an open sight 30-30, in Texas and on his property. That was his land. And so it was, in a sense, our family land. And that is one reason why I'm in this business now, is I can remember to this day, there's not a whole lot that I remember about spending time with my grandfather. He died at kind of a fairly young age compared to where I was. But that's a memory that sticks with me and influenced my entire life. And so I think I was just thinking about this the other night, because I'm getting up there in age, and, you know, my kids, I've got one 21 and he's hunted with me all the time. And I thought, you know, I've got some younger daughters. I thought, you know, there is a chance that I'm going to have grandkids.
Yeah.
And I don't want to miss that experience. So I want to be able to have my grandchildren around to go and hunt on a specific property, on my property, because it's something that they're going to remember, you know, pawpaw through.
Exactly.
And you create, I guess you would say, just a value system and in memories with those kids and throughout your family that you're not going to get any other way.
I agree.
So, and the only way to do that is with land. You can lease land if you want to, but the best way, even if it's just 100 acres, you know, hunt on dad or grandpa's land. It's great.
Leasing land's great, but it's not the same as putting your feet on the dirt of something you own. I currently have a 3-year-old and a 10-month-old, and the memories you create and the knowledge you hope you're kind of passing on, I can't imagine anything any better than that. It's just it's kind of a lifestyle. But there's a lot of life lessons, I think, that go along with being a steward of property and of the wildlife and land. And, you know, it's what I hope to pass on to my children.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, there's so many distractions out there now that, you know, when you spend time with your family, everybody's got their phones or whatever. But when you're out on land and when you're hunting, whether you're walking or driving around or whatever, it's, you know, I did that just this last week and actually went out and hunted on a property with my father has passed away, but it was one of his best friends. He's now 85 years old. And one of the reasons that he called me is he had this opportunity to go hunt this property. He's like, man, I loved your dad. And you and I have been friends for a long time. And we go out and we enjoy this property. And there's no looking at your phones. It was hours of driving around and looking and doing a little bit of hunting. And there's no way other way of obtaining that experience. And so now we have pictures. We spent time talking about family members, and I learned things about my father that I did not know because he knew him as a friend. And the only way that you learn that is spending that quality time together.
Yep. Yeah. I don't think there's much better. Can't beat it. Something about bonding, even with your buddies, whether it's family or friends or whatever, there's something special about being out there together. And like you said, passing on knowledge and learning stuff about people. I come across these old deer stands all the time that are in the crotches of trees on land. I don't know the stories behind them, but it always makes me wonder, you know, I wonder what old timer was, what he was thinking when he put the stand up. And they're usually located, actually. I've learned that old timers were a lot smarter. There weren't as many deer back then, especially here in Tennessee. And they're a lot smarter than I give them credit for. When you find one of those old stands, those old wooden stands up there, this little platform, maybe pay attention to that area. They seem to know what they were doing.
Look around. It'll be in a saddle the thermals are right in the morning. And then,
it's not a random placement, I promise. So I pay attention to that stuff. But so earlier you mentioned you got to hunt, and it sounded like you had a pretty good hunt. You want to tell us about it a little bit?
Oh, it was great. It was just one of those opportunities that pops up. And it was saying, you know, we all spend a lot of time hunting if you're doing this. And if the family is not going with you, then all the responsibility of picking kids up, doing, you know, practice, whatever, is going to go back to the wife. And, you know, I'm married to the most wonderful woman in the world. We've been married for 31 years now. We have three kids, and a couple of them are still young, you know, 14 and 17. So, you know, going in and telling my wife, hey, I just got this chance to go and who it was going with. And her first response was, after she goes, oh my gosh, what's going to fall on me while you're gone, right? You know? I've gotten that. But it was, yeah, you can't turn that down. You have to go. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, you're right. She's like, you'll probably never have that opportunity again. Look who that is. And, you know, when it's all said and done, her family did not hunt when she was growing up. They were more, her dad was a musician, actually had a band that opened for Elvis.
Oh, really?
They're from, you know, that was in Arkansas. She's from South Louisiana. So she never really understood that culture. But what she does understand is when I come back and I've spent time with somebody like that or with my core friend group, we're men that stick together because we're Christian men with the same values. And getting back together, holding each other accountable, talking about life, talking about priorities, talking about the energy that we put into our business as opposed to home, and just getting refocused on, let's get the distractions out of life. What are our responsibilities as husbands, as men, as, you know, business owners, whatever that is? And it's invaluable. And I always come back in a better place. So she's gotten to the point where she's like, you know, one of the best investments that she allows me to do. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, my wife and I, we got married. I was older in life, I guess, or late in life. I didn't get married till I was 40. We were talking about the outdoors and how much I enjoy it. And she asked me, like, don't you get bored? Or I told her, being out there and hunting, it's more of a, you refocus your priorities. It's more of a sanctuary to me. I don't know if that makes sense to everybody. It's just a place where I'm out there. I'm in God's creation. You got a lot of time to think about, like you said, now that I have a family, I am married. Are your priorities right? Are you holding yourself accountable? All that stuff. And then watching nature interact, and you just see the kind of the beauty, the amazement of creation and how it all intertwines with one another and works so symbiotically and perfectly. I'm a biologist, so in college I was taught Big Bang Theory and all this stuff, and I'm like, the odds are a lot worse that this all sparked and all worked so well together through, you know, lightning in a puddle of water with some random cells versus a you know, someone creating it.
Yeah, it's like, as they say, it's like believing that a tornado blew through a junkyard. Right. And on the other side is a perfectly functional Rolex watch or 747. You know, it's like random selection just does not really work long term, you know. So the good Lord put these things into motion. And at my age, I've learned that is the safest route to go. My life goes much better. And the power that we have as believers in Christ is very real. And I've learned that over time. It's funny when you were saying, because I'll often send my wife a picture, like send her a picture from the box blind down the Sendero in South Texas. And it's like, everything is gray brown. You know, there's not a leaf on anything. It's just the desert almost. And I'm sending her pictures and I'm like, isn't this beautiful? And she's like, okay, yeah, I guess, you know. But it's our perspective. It's what we see, because
it is,
you know, out there it's nature, and you never know what's going to pop out from behind the next tree. Yep.
It's a miracle in itself, that's for sure. Anything else you want to cover on y'all's platform, or maybe tell us a little bit about your publication, the Land Magazine, because I get that every quarter, and there's some just amazing farms in that publication.
Thank you. It's you know, print advertising is not cheap, but neither is internet advertising right now. And what everybody's looking for is just a return on their investment. So we have a lot of our advertisers online. You know, it's usually the top brokers in a certain area, and what they're doing initially is just trying to get listings. Sure. You know, so multi-million-dollar places, and we'll put that into the magazine. And also when a seller is out looking or interviewing brokers, it is always, you know, what are you going to do for my property? You know, so you're going to put it online, or you're going to put it in the magazine, or you're going to do a card mailer. What's your overall corporation or company like that you're working with? So I think that is number one, why you're seeing more and more companies like Mossy Oak, Whitetail Properties, but whatever it is, they're all great organizations, but there is power behind having that number of agents and brokers together and the network they develop and the support that you have within that system. So we're getting more and more of those advertisers that are in the magazine, but the magazine is just kind of it's a go before. So it allows us to mail the magazine to buyers and sellers that are out there and just people within the industry and direct them. What we're really trying to do is guide them to land.com, right? Because that's going to be their greatest resource. And that's why we're doing some of the co-branding like we did with the cards, is we believe that our platform is the best. It offers the most that is out there. So brokers, and it's not cheap, you know, and I know over time, you know, we have gotten some flack from that. I have to be honest that even on the online side, prices have gone up so much. But I always say there are cheaper places to advertise. But if any of those places get to the level that we are at, where it takes 100 people in the support of like the CoStar Group to compete or to lead the industry at this level, they're going to be at this price.
Absolutely.
That's just the way that it works. That's the way that it pencils out. So, you know, we don't like the idea that our prices have to go up. We would like to be $30 for a listing plan and not $300 or $3,000, depending upon the level. But the real answer is that a good return on investment? You know, and frankly, it's like any business when it comes down to it, is when you're selling a piece of property, right? Somebody might come in and say, golly, I should have bought this 2 years ago because I could have gotten it at $700,000 as opposed to $1.2 million. And golly, I'm just not going to pay $1.2 million. Well, don't. You know, I mean, if the property is worth it, it's worth it. And somebody's going to come along and buy it, and they're going to go, damn it, I missed it again. You know, so that's what we say is, honestly, let us know if our product is not working and it's not worth what we're charging for. Because if it's not, they're not going to pay it, and we're not going to have that advertiser, and we're not going to stay in business. But most of the time what we hear is, well, we need to, because it's the best source or return on investment that we have. And that's where you go. It's what a buyer and a seller are going to agree to is where you end up, and that's fair market value. As we say, we have a lot of people that work very hard at our company every day, and that's what we're trying to do. We're marketing to the buyers in the market that are out there, and the sellers to the visitors to grow the website. And the more of those that we have, then the more brokers will have, and more properties will have to go on that site. And every day, every single day, it's kind of like Apple, 16.2 upgrade. We have that every week, every single week. And we have a zillion items in the queue right now that we're working on for improvements for the following week and next year.
Yep. I obviously am a client, or I'm a paying member to be part of Land.com's group. And so I can speak to this a little bit from the agent side, and maybe from the market side of it. Is when I look at who advertises, it's usually agents and brokers that are willing to pay that amount of money is because it's working, right? And they're obviously mm-hmm. successful in what they do because they're able to pay that and continue. What are you getting out of your investment? Your return on investment, right? And have I made my money back 1,500 times over because I did it? Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's why when you look on there, you see all these very successful agents, because they're willing to put their money back into their business and be a part of something that they know increases the likelihood of selling your property. And I use this a lot in my listing presentations. I'll say, hey, whatever county we're in, say it's Giles County in Tennessee, pull up Giles County on land.com or whatever, and just tell me what you see. And usually on that first page, you're going to find me. It's a good selling point. I think you and I talked about it before we started the podcast, is my spiel, and I don't like to get super heavy in marketing unless I have to when I'm doing a listing presentation. But my main statement is I can confidently say that nobody else in this market, no other agent is going to get it on more places than I'm going to get it on for you. There may be some people mm-hmm. that can get it on the same mm-hmm. amount, but they're not going to get it on more. So I'm going to put your property in front of the most people that it can be put in front of.
Well, at the end of the day, it comes back to exactly what you said. He's standing in front of you, that person. Yeah. You can have the biggest brand in the world. You can have all the sport. You can have everything. But at the end of the day, it's you shaking the hand of the landowner, the seller, looking him or her in the eye and having an agreement. You're going to have the paperwork and everything that supports and keeps everybody on the same page. But at the end of the day, that's exactly what it is. It's a relationship that you're establishing so that you can represent that person in the market and do absolutely the very best you can to get them the highest price, or the lowest price when it comes to buying. But that friction in the market there, in that marketing, is exactly how you come to the fair market value of that property.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you saw, we just released it, I think it was about a week ago, but we recently acquired Acre Value.
Oh, did you? I didn't see that, but that's good to know.
So, and what that does is while we have the marketing and we have the properties and everything, as far as the ag analytics, for, like I said, when a mailing list is pulled or a list of properties in that county, and it is, you have a line for timberland, for tillable land, for pasture land, whatever. There's so much data that's available out there. And when all that is aggregated and put together in one spot, it's going to take a while for us to figure out exactly how our two sites are going to work together. But it fits. It's like when we had Lands of America, Land and Farm, the missing pieces of the puzzle were LandWatch.
Gotcha.
And so when LandWatch came in, then our national coverage was evened out, across the nation. And so what this does from, like we said, a marketing, and we have the listings and everything, but the data side of it, that tech side, now this fills that piece of the puzzle.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, we're very excited. Great people. with Acre Value and Ag Analytics, and everybody's very excited about the acquisition and what it's going to do for the industry.
Yeah. You know, during the Super Bowl, I believe, and I've seen a lot of other commercials.
Two commercials. Four last year, two this year.
And then it was at homes.com they acquired, and I think that's going to be just a whole nother facet to y'all's, to what y'all have together.
Yeah, it is. And we were talking about MLSs earlier, and you know, what a lot of people don't realize is as far as customer facing, the MLSs that were out there had realtor.com, right? But realtor.com ended up being sold off. I think it's owned by News Corp now, which is Fox News, and they've had all kinds of trouble. And then you have Zillow that is out there, and it's, I think, probably the number one site. Yeah. But if you put your listing on Zillow, I think it can automatically go on there, but you get it on there on the level that anybody's going to see it. If you're the listing agent or broker, you're not the one that's going to get the phone call.
Right.
And so that phone call is going to go to somebody who pays to be on that listing, not you as a listing agent. And then if you were that person on somebody else's listing, in addition to paying, you're also going to pay a very high percentage of your commission.
Right.
So across all of our platforms, whether it is apartments.com, homes.com, land.com, CoStar, LoopNet, whatever it is, our policy is you're listing your lead. If you pay to put your property onto our site, that is your listing. You're the one that's going to get the lead, period. That's all we do. And because there is no real place, you have the local MLSs, but if these other sites out there are not really supporting that, then you have to look at what is the best experience. And we are absolutely confident that homes.com, and it really is the best experience that is out there, in the same way that apartments.com was bought, all the market studies were done, it was launched with a big marketing campaign, and now it's over 50% of the market. Yeah. So I'm very confident that soon we will be that in the homes business. And there are a lot of the land.com listings that upload and are viewable on homes. So homes has a land platform.
Yeah, that's
nice. And vice versa, people that are on homes.com with some country properties, and those are going to get visibility on land.com. The network that we have is amazing. As we said, we look out there and there are competitors in the market, but you can add them all up together. And I don't think they equal half of our listings of our size. And the funny thing is, some of those sites that may be the loudest talkers in the industry, and they get people to buy into that site, are not even on our list of competitors.
Right. Yeah, I could see that.
So, yeah. So when you are an agent or a broker that's out there looking for the right site, you really need to be careful to dig into, you know, what the analytics are behind it and what those stats are. It's a tough business.
It is.
It takes growth, you know, every day, but, you know, whether it's homes or apartments, CoStar, our CEO, Andy Florence, is in it to win it, because that's what you have to do in business. So good people working hard.
I know, I appreciate it. Y'all have done a lot for me. You and I partnered, what, 4 or 5 months ago? Mm-hmm. And I think it might have been the first ever postcard campaign.
It was a use case that we did.
Yeah.
I think it actually went out beginning of September. That's, like September.
That sounds 1. Right. Yeah. I'm a big postcard guy. I do a lot of mailers. And so y'all were kind enough to use me as a test case, and we sent out some cards, and they've done very well. Y'all helped me with some branding on there, co-branding and some design, and I think it turned out really well. It was a cool experience. Hopefully that'll grow and take off. I know postcards are really big for some agents, and for others, not so much. Print marketing is not cheap and mailing is not cheap, but for me and my background, or what I've done since I've gotten in the business, that the guy that I worked with when I started doing this, he was just a postcard fanatic, you know, 4 times a year, postcard every quarter. He was extremely successful. And that's kind of what I grew up on as far as being an agent. And so I've continued to adopt that. And yes, do I spend a lot in marketing? Yeah, I mean, relatively, but I get a lot of listings back and a lot of business. And so to me, it strikes the right balance.
You know, there's a couple of things that we learned out of that, because working with you, you know, you had quality materials. You had a very good card. It was very nice. Colors on it were good. I think we did a good job helping with some of the design and changing things a little bit. But when it came down to, we use a quality printer, we use a quality mailhouse, and we use quality data.
Right.
And we tried lesser experiences there by not using quite as good printers. You can go to some of these online printers and both sides aren't going to be coded stock. Right. And they say they're deduping the list, but all of a sudden five cards show up in one address. You know, and what we found through this is, like anything, you get what you pay for. And at the end of the day, the ROI on yours, you know, it was an expensive ROI, but it wasn't much different than what people are paying online.
Right.
And what it actually, so it was kind of shocking to a lot of us. You know, I think in one way it's like, hey, let's check this out because maybe doing postcards is not the best spend of your money. And then realizing, because you picked up can you say how many listings you picked up as a result of that?
I'd have to look on the exact total. I mean, some are still in place. We just have not released the listing yet, or we're still working on getting the listing ready. But I would say at the end of the day on that one mailer, I'm probably going to be at 15 listings off of that. And total dollar figure, it's going to be close to $10 to $12 million worth of properties. So, you know, that's a full year. If you could sell all those, that's a good year for, you know, for an agent.
So that, and that helps, that really helps us as we go. I think it's the quality that really works.
Yes.
And I think we can continue to improve. You know, one thing Ag Analytics allows us to do is to really filter and obtain the best mailing lists that are out there and to drill down on the data there. But so the spend might be high, but if it ends up with that many listings, the ROI is good. And also, you know, what I learned from magazine publishing, because people are like, you know, magazines, they just don't get the return, they only get a couple of phone calls. But in reality, what we learned is, wow, it's a really good ROI because you're not spending $20,000, $25,000, or $30,000 on a mailer for one card. Maybe you're just going to spend $1,700 for the page. But at the end of the day, if that gets you a return and it's only $1,700 and it helps you get more listings, it's just another, you know, tool in the toolbox that would actually.
When you say tool in the toolbox, I think that's key because in the past I've had listings in Land Magazine and I keep one in my briefcase because whether I'm going to put that property I'm going to in Land Magazine or not, I'm going to let them know that I've done it before and I have the ability to do it and I'm willing to do it. And then when you talked about the postcards, I found that it's also consistency with those. So I'll give a shout out to my old partner, Gary. He taught me once a quarter. A lot of times in the summer, it's going to be slow. And then the spring and winter, it's going to be hot. But keep putting that postcard in front of them. And it just builds. It's no different than driving by a McDonald's sign or driving by a certain billboard. I think they say it takes, what, somebody 17 times to see your brand before they remember it or some marketing thing like that. But you'll be amazed at how many people's houses I've been to. And they'll pull out a stack of cards and they'll have 5 to 10 of my cards stacked up. I've heard a lot. They love the pictures on the front because sometimes we did a little bit different where we showed a lot of listings and I like that one too. And I like to vary it up, but on some of them, I just have what I think is a pretty picture, well photographed picture on the front and a little bit of data or a little bit of branding. And then on the back kind of get into, you know, stats or whatever. And it's just amazing how many people hold on to that postcard. My assumption was everybody gets that just like a Jiffy Lube card in the mail and it never hits their table. It probably goes from mailbox to trash can the majority of the time. But I've been pleasantly surprised at how many people actually hold on to those. And you catch the right people, right? Somebody that's, well, I got a farm and I may think about selling it one day and they'll just tuck that card away. And then luckily, you send them the next card and it reminds them or what, and eventually they become a call and a potential client or a client. And I just feel like quality and consistency is the key in that game. And
yeah, they put it on the refrigerator, they're going to see it every day.
Exactly. You
know, because it's a pretty enough card, they're going to do that.
When you get somebody's postcard, they didn't just pop out $200 or $500 worth of stuff. It's an expensive process. But when you look at the return on investment, it's one of my top marketing tools to get listings. It's not everybody's cup of tea to do it. And you got to build up to it, obviously, because it is an expense. The top of my marketing budget is to keep a consistent postcard flow. I've changed brokerages partway through my career. And so people have even got cards from the old brokerage and the new brokerage, but they're keeping up with the right face, right? And that's what I want is whatever name's up top. You know, I'm proud of my brokerage, obviously, and they do a great job, but I want people to not only believe in the brokerage, but believe in the face, Paul Morrison, on that card. And
because it's that relationship that's going to do
it. That's the business getter. I appreciated y'all working with me on that postcard. And I hope it gave you all a lot of good data, and it definitely did well for me.
100%. Really, really did. It was good. We're looking at expanding it significantly, but what we're keying in on is not necessarily volume, but quality. You know, and I believe, you know, like this was, you know, covers like this, you know, and the color is a lot better if you're looking at it in person, but it gets people's attention. So when you have really, you know, we put a kind of a satin finish on this. So the feel of it is really good quality. And so it ends up staying out there on coffee tables. And, you know, and so I think when you do quality, that's what people are attracted to.
I agree.
And
if you're going to do it right.
It works. Yep. Do it right. Yeah.
We're getting probably about a little over an hour, but I did want to mention, we talked about it. Land.com, y'all have a podcast out with, I believe Miss Lori hosts it. I didn't know if you wanted to let people know how to maybe find that. It's probably pretty easy, Land.com.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the Land.com podcast. Lori does most of the interviews. I do interviews more with the brokers and on the marketing side like this. So I'd love to have you come on.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
We'll record that. And our marketing manager, Matt Rand, he does one also. Okay. And so he does it more on the marketing side and talks to some really important people. But Lori is the one that's out there grinding it around away every week to get something posted every week. So God bless her, because she not only does that, but she writes content for the magazine. She also helps out with production in the magazine. And that's another thing that we do, is a lot of the content that comes to the magazine also goes on to the land.com network content page. And we are also now putting the digital magazine on the homepage of land.com.
Okay, nice.
So what we do out there for the magazine is something that no other website, no other publication has the ability of doing. Yep. So I always say, in it to win it. So whatever platform it is, whether it is online or print magazine or print cards, our goal is just to do it the best with the highest quality.
I'm not sponsored by y'all or anything. I'm a paying customer, but I'm a big, big fan of land.com. The large reach of who y'all touch and how many people interact with your platforms has definitely been a big help to my business. I love the fact that, like you said, when you list something with y'all, you stay as the contact for that property. That in itself, people buy leads a lot of, like you're talking on these other platforms, you got to kind of go in and buy leads. But the buyer leads that I generate off of listings on there, I mean, it's hard to even quantify, because sometimes I don't even get to work with a lot of them because I'm so busy. But you could keep another agent, a buyer's agent, busy full time just based off the contacts I get of, they want to talk about my property, or they saw a property of mine in the area. So they're not really looking at that particular property, but they are calling me to see if I can help them find something else in the area. And just being on the website, and I've got a couple of advertisements and banners there that I pay a little extra for, but y'all are keeping me busy with not only helping me get leads for listings and calls for listings, but bringing in a lot of buyers. Things are turning over, so I'm going to have to resupply my inventory on listings and then working with a lot of these buyers. Like I said, it's nice not to have to go purchase leads from anybody, that I'm organically getting them through that system. And like I said, I could keep another agent busy full time with just working with buyers, and I'm working on maybe doing something with that. But I've appreciated y'all working with me on the postcards and all the help I get from your regional guys that reach out and help me with metrics and different things.
Well, you are a valued customer, and we are very grateful for your business.
The title of this podcast, I believe, was going to be Trouble Finding Your Dream Farm. And if that's what you're looking to do, I would highly encourage you to search on the platforms we're discussing. I appreciate you coming on and spending time with us on the Land Hunter podcast. If they want to reach you, I'll put everything in the show notes where they can get on land.com, or if they want to get in touch with you about Land Magazine or any of y'all's podcasts, sure. We'll put it all in the show notes. And I definitely recommend y'all listen to Miss Lori. She's got a great personality, and I got a lot of information and a lot of laughs out of it too, actually. I wish I had half the charisma as a host that she does.
Yeah, she's good. As they say, she's the pistol.
Yeah.
No doubt. Well, hey, if anybody would like, and I can hook you up with her, you and I can do a podcast together, whatever that is. If anybody needs to reach me, it's just talexander@land.com. Email me and I always respond. We're good about that. But thank you very much for having me on. As I said, we appreciate your business and look forward to the future with you.
Yes, sir. It was our pleasure. Well, you have a good end of your day and enjoy the weekend coming up.
Thank you. Yeah, you too.
All right. Paul. Thanks, Tom.
Talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.